Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 764. And if you're in America and you're listening to this on the day that it's being posted, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a nice holiday with your family and it's not too awkward and they don't say weird shit that makes you go, I'm related to these people. Do I turn into this later? Is there a thing that happens and a switch that flips? I hope you guys have a nice and wonderful holiday weekend. And if you're listening to this after Thanksgiving, listen to stuff sooner, I guess, or ignore this part. By the way, this episode brought to you by The Message from GE Podcast Theater and Panoply. This is essentially it's kind of a War of the Worlds style podcast. There's a doctor named Nikki Tomlin who has a PhD in linguistics, and Nikki is deciphering this alien message from like 70 years ago. It's really cool. It's an 8-episode arc. And there's science and there's fiction, and it's super cool. So try to decode The Message received from outer space 70 years ago. Nikki Tomlin, do it, because I'm telling people to listen. Don't miss a second of this show. Subscribe to The Message on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. This episode is Mr. Daniel Radcliffe. Oh, Nerdist Community Corkboard. Let's promote being nice to each other. And fostering understanding and having conversations and appreciating everything that we have and being nice to people around you. Okay, good. That's the corkboard. Dan Radcliffe on the podcast, returning. God, Daniel Radcliffe is like the coolest, fucking nicest guy in the world. He's such a good dude. This was, we recorded this a few weeks back. He had asked me to speak on his behalf at the dedication of his star on the Walk of Fame, and it is a sweet location. It is right in front of the Chinese Theater and across from El Capitan, and he's just a good guy. So I'm very excited to have him back on, and he is promoting Victor Frankenstein, which is in theaters now. You should go see it this weekend. What else are you going to do, huh? Get away from the family for a couple minutes and go see Victor Frankenstein. Always promote everything that Daniel Radcliffe does. Good guy. Love him. So here we go. This is the Nerdist Podcast number 764 with Daniel Radcliffe.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm obviously a big At Midnight fan.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
And it's like, it's some of the most... It was really like watching that that kind of made me go, like, this shit's really cool. Like, really cool people like Harry Potter. Like, because, you know, you grow up being slightly self-effacing about it, and it's like... And suddenly, I don't know, there's just something about you, the jokes that people make about it are so full of love. And like,
absolutely.
And they're also some of the few good Harry Potter jokes I ever fucking hear. Because I've heard them all and they're mostly shit now. And like, so like, it's like, that's, and I was just like, that's, you know, and you're also, I feel like you are, you know, a bastion of you stand for a lot of people who never have to apologize for how much they love something, whatever.
No,
that
I
thing
never
is.
Want people to, because yeah. I had to when I was growing up, and I didn't, you know, my pre-internet proto-nerd era was just like, well, you get three people in school who like the same stuff, and then no one else.
Yeah.
And now, you know, everything's so...
There's something kind of great about that. That's I feel like as well, like, that's the other reason I love At Midnight, is At Midnight is one of the few things that, like, makes me feel good about the internet.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
There's very... Because, like, sometimes you can get very bogged down, and it's like, no, there's some really, like, clever and funny stuff happening.
There's good places.
There's a lot of goodness.
It's not all caps and hate.
No, it's not. Yeah, exactly.
There's some good parts.
Just YouTube.
I mean, anytime you feel like you'd want to come on, I think
I don't think I could.
You're funny,
I'm not,
though. You're funny,
I'm not
though.
Like, because we do it, me and my girlfriend, like, try and play along at home. And, and like, particularly with, you know, oh, what's around I'm trying to think of called?
Which one? Oh, Hashtag Wars?
Yes, Hashtag Wars. And we have had some really good ones, but like... I don't think, like, on the spot, I think I'd just be so terrified. I have so much respect for when, like, actors go on there And, like, people who aren't, like, straight-up comics, and, like, when you have to do, like, some specials on, like, for a TV show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man, you're brave. Because that's, like, that seems like the hardest
but
thing.
But the show is designed to, you know, everyone... The show is designed to be as supportive as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's never...
Yeah.
So it's not like, aha! No. We gotcha! You fucked this one up! You know.
But that's what's great about it as well. Because it's just... It's the type of show that... has existed in England for a sort of... There's been loads of versions.
You have, like, a channel of them.
It's basically, yeah, like, it's that's the route to become a comedian in England. Like, I feel like you do, you know, you... That's, like, what people... A lot of people want to get on, to you know, get on that and then get on Live at the Apollo, and, like, that's the route that a lot of people take. But, like, it... But what a lot of those shows and what kind of the most prominent of those shows has done... It started off great, but then, like, now it's just... The sense of competition on it is, like, vicious. And whereas, like, you feel on your show, it never seems like that. Like, it's just... There's a lot more... Yeah, it's very sort of warm, and that's a lot to do with
you.
Oh,
I appreciate that. Yeah, well, I always wanted it to feel like... You know, like, I know almost everyone who comes on. There's sometimes people come on that I haven't met, but... Ultimately, I just wanted to feel like, oh, we're all hanging out and fucking around, and this is what it's like to be hanging out with comics.
And you introduced me via that to Ron Funches.
Ron Funches!
As well, like, Jesus.
Ron Funches!
God,
the best!
Just, it's one of those, he's one of those comedians that, like, you just start smiling from the moment that, from the moment he opens his mouth, because the voice is quite unexpected, and it's got that, like, that, just that fantastic, like... measured speech saying the funniest shit.
And he happens to be hilarious too. Like, everything about him, I think he would destroy in England. I think if he went to England, he would fucking destroy.
I think he would, absolutely.
Because he's got kind of the silly soft presentation with really smart jokes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think so thank you for...
Oh my God, of course. I want to go to England and I want to go perform, and I was talking to Jimmy Carr about coming over and doing...
Oh,
I don't know.
8 out of 10 cats. You should
eight
totally
out of 10
do
cats.
Eight out of 10
maybe
cats.
8 out of 10 cats. And he was like, you should do QI. I'm like, I don't. That one scares
me.
Oh,
you would also love QI.
I love it, but...
You should totally go on QI. You would have a trove of information.
I think I'd be too nervous to meet Stephen Fry. Like, there's some people where
he's
you're just...
He's so nice, though.
He seems really cool.
He's really cool. And he's also, like... He is human. Like, he doesn't know everything. Like, he is an encyclopedia, but he's not, like... He's not intimidating when you meet him at all, like, because he's just, like... He talks about normal shit, too. He's not just constantly going around being, you know, verbose and intelligent. He's great. I've been fortunate to meet him a few times, and hung out with him a bit, and he's great. You should really go on that show. You should go on that, and definitely 8 out of 10 cats you enjoy. You could also... There's a great thing they do now called 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, which is there's a quiz show during the day, which is traditionally watched by, like, students and older people and me, and that is about basically, like, you get, I think, 8 or 9 letters and you have to find the longest word you can make out of it, and then there's a numbers round, which I fail miserably at and don't pay attention to. But then what they've done now is, so it's a very straight up quiz show during the day, and then what they do now, they have 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, where they just, like, get a load of comedians on and do the exact same show but with people who are just shit at the game and, like, sometimes don't try, and I'm like, I have a wife, one letter word of J, like, it's a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I wanna, it's really, my work schedule has prevented me from going to England because I can't,
so you
I only
this,
get, like,
and you do The Talking Dead and you're doing a tour all the time, isn't it? Because you, like, say the Fun Comfortable Tour at the end of
yeah,
every show.
Yeah, just,
so
it,
like,
it
just...
never stops. I'm shooting the special in January, and that's gonna be this tour as a special. And then I start touring again, like, a month later with the new... Like, I have to start the new one.
Dude.
So it just, you know... But I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I love it too much. But, you know, like, when you...
Yeah, it doesn't feel like work.
Well, yeah, exactly. And when you go through these periods where you get opportunities to cool stuff, you're like, I gotta do that. Why wouldn't I? Of course I gotta
absolutely
do that.
One day people might not be asking. Like,
exactly.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, you've got... Like, that's... I mean, like... I feel like that's the, you know, what my life's been composed of largely. It just is the opportunity to somebody saying, do you want to do this crazy thing? And me going, yeah.
But not everyone great. Would appreciate it, though. And that's the thing I said. And first of all, I was so honored that you asked me to speak at the presentation of your star.
Yeah, so when you did it.
And Chris Columbus, who is a freaking legend.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
He's the nicest guy.
But honestly, what I said is absolutely true, is that I think the best thing... that people should know about you is just what a nice, down-to-earth guy you are, when all of the evidence could suggest that if you weren't, people would go, okay, yeah, I get it. He's been in the business a long time, and he's in this big... But just the fact that you are just like a sweet guy, that's such an important thing.
But thank you, first of all. Also, like, it's such a hilariously low bar to have to hit as like an actor that, like, if you're just like a fairly decent person, people are like, this is amazing, how did this happen? And like, so like I and it's also it's kind of sad that, like, I don't know, that, like, you said, like, if people would understand, they've got, oh, well, he's been in the business a long time. This is a really fucking great business. Like, there's no reason that being in this business should screw you up. And it always seems like, I think there are, like, some people who are, you know, who you hear stories about who are mad that are genuinely, like, probably, like, slightly mentally unwell. I think there's always going to be some of them. But I think a lot of the time it is, like, some weird choice and something insular about, like, people who want to live in a just echo chamber where, I don't know, they hear they're fantastic all the time. And I don't know. It's a weird... thing. But I also think that, like, the vast majority of actors are totally cool. It's just that the ones who are dicks, you know, you hear stories about and you get reputation. And but I think they're getting fewer and far between. I mean I've worked with so few. Like, I mean, I've heard gazillions of stories, but actually only encountered it like once or twice.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah,
because when I was talking to Chris about it before the thing, before you got there, I was saying, you know, Dan's such a nice guy, and whenever you meet someone who was a child actor who grew up in the business and they turn out to be cool, it's usually because their parents had very good parents. And Chris said, you know, it was one of the things about when we were casting Harry Potter, we actually were casting parents as well.
Yeah.
Because they knew that this was going to be a journey and they didn't want to have any craziness with parents. And he said, so, like, all the main kids, like, all the parents, everyone was just cool. It was just really cool.
I mean, I as I said, like, in my speech, you know, and they always, I'm incredible, because everyone always thinks that Shobi's parents are going to be pushy. And, like, my parents are so not pushy, but I rarely ever talk about it, because as soon as you start talking about it, in other people's minds, you're, like, maybe protesting too much or something. So, sure. Like, I just very rarely talk about them. And they, you know, they were always, like, between every film, they would say to me, you know, are you still happy? Is this still something you want to do? Like, it was never, I'm not somebody who, you know, is living their dreams for them, even though they were both actors when they were young. But I never felt, like, pushed towards anything or... And today, like, several times throughout the day, everyone was like, do they want to come on the stars and, like, get pictures done and stuff? And I would just kept looking over at them and I was going, no, don't, please. And so, you know, I did. I got insanely lucky with them and the fact that they, you know, they knew the business. So even if they hadn't, like... Because they hadn't ever done many films. My dad has one acting credit on IMDb. But they, like, which is actually a film with Maggie Smith and, like, Bob Hoskins. And,
oh, wow.
Like, loads of people that I ended up working with later on. Weirdly.
Did they remember working with your dad?
No.
Okay.
my dad had one line, and they cut away from his bloody face when he says it. He's young priest, and his line was, I think, but why would you do such a thing?
What was the movie?
The Lonely Passion of Miss Judith Hearn.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, could there be a more British sounding film? That is the most British sounding film.
The Lonely Passion of Miss Judith Hearn.
It's like that really hits everything right there.
It really does.
I mean, the only thing that could make it more of it were, like, Sherlock Holmes presents. And then,
I never watched it. We watched it. I bought a copy of it once because we got taken with the idea of it. But when we got taken with the idea of it, we happened to be in Spain.
Uh-huh.
So the only copy of it we could find. And we did, like, we found a copy of it. There was just one in, like, the first place we went into. I don't know if it was, like, a big movie there. I'm sure it's probably not.
That's right.
But it was called, like, La Pasión de Soledadro.
Oh,
like,
my
something
God.
Like, great sounding.
Your dad may have an Oscar waiting for him in Spain. You don't even know.
But we got it. And so we watched him, like, I think... dubbed, maybe, or subtitled as well, or
is
something.
Is that young priest over there?
Yeah.
He was young priest.
And I think he was maybe lifting... I think maybe he has a scene. I think maybe Maggie's in the scene. I think maybe she is the she that he is saying, why would you do such a thing about?
That's amazing.
So I was to have people that knew, you know, a bit about the industry and from various sides of it. And they really like guided me through and just like how to be on set and how to, you know, be focused. Like there was, I remember, you know, and you do it by screwing up. Like I remember in the audition phase of Potter, when I had the part and they were auditioning people to play Malfoy, there was a kid that came in, and I like, still feel bad about this sometimes. There was a kid who came in and he had to say the line, "I'm Malfoy, Draco Malfoy," and he chose to give a absolute like James Bond reading of that line, Malfoy, Draco Malfoy, and at my like 10-year-old, 11-year-old self found that funny and laughed on his first take. And it's like his audition, which like it's a dick thing to do, even at 10 or 11, like it's still like come on. And I remember turning around to the back of the room, I just saw my mum looking at me like, "Don't you laugh in this kid's audition."
Oh.
Like, and I was just like, okay, yeah, really good point. Did not laugh anymore. So, you know, stuff like that.
That's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was like now. I mean, I'm sure he's fine. So, I'm sure he's not like, I'm sure he hasn't been thinking about it. Like, oh, God, I hope not. What if he has?
And then that motherfucker laughed at my
line. My perfect line delivery.
He's like, could have been Draco.tv. It's just all of the, he's just cut himself into all the films. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so funny because I feel like, you know, when I did the thing today, I thought, well, I don't want to make a bunch of, I made one reference to it because I'm like, well, if I should make one reference to it, but it is, but I know, I mean, I know, and you've done so many other things, which were, I mean, so many other people would have just done that and then like, well, that's it, but you've made so many bold, interesting choices since then, and so I think it'll end up being one of those things. Hey, it's really cool. He was Harry Potter, but he's done a billion other things since then.
That's what I hope for. But I mean, like, I've also like definitely accepted a long time ago that Harry Potter's always going to be the thing I'm probably first and foremost associated with, and I'm very much okay with that. There's this weird narrative that everyone wants to write, I think, about people coming out of franchises, that you either have to reinvent yourself and like disown whatever had gone before and like then do new stuff, or just do that forever and that be the only thing you're known for. And it's weird that you can obviously do both. Like, you can obviously still be incredibly proud of what you've done and, you know, do other stuff. Because because as much as there's, you know, there were probably, like, if say, half the directors and casting directors and people who are likely to give me jobs in the industry were thinking, oh, he's only going to ever be Harry Potter after I finish those films, and I don't happen to think it was that high a number, but say it's, like, absolutely, like, half the people out there, the other half were going, oh, but I wonder if he'd like to try this. Like, right. I wonder what he'd do if he was doing this. Like, people get excited about the opportunity to be the one to reinvent you.
Absolutely.
Like, people give you that chance. Like, and as long as you take it and try and, like, do the best job with it that you can. And I feel like if there's the best thing, one of the best things I inherited from my dad was, I think, taste in scripts. And, you know, that's what he was. You know, he was a literary agent and he worked for writers and directors, and so I feel like that's the thing that I have in my arsenal, that like nobody, that when you're doing interviews at 18 and people are saying like, oh, you know, what are you going to do after this, that's the thing that I had, like, that gave me confidence, was like, I think I can pick scripts and I think I can pick good, you know, projects. And also I've been freed from the, you know, any kind of pressure to look, obviously if a film is commercial and loads of people go and see it, that's great, but I've also been in the, like, the most commercially successful thing that I'm ever going to be in. Like, there's no way that I could do something that would make $5 billion or whatever it is. Like, I don't know. Unless I build a rocket and sell it to NASA, like, I don't know how else that's I don't know how I could do that. So, like, it's you know, there's, since that's done, I feel like I'm in a position where I can afford to make choices based on, like, is this going to make me happy? And that involves, like, challenging me and doing something I haven't done before and just being fun and working with people I want to work with. Yeah. Like, most of my friends who are my age and act, if they get, like, a horrible, shitty job with people they hate, they have to do it. And so to, like, not have that is ridiculous at 26.
Well, I think people know. I think people on some level, there's a, they have a molecular understanding when you're doing something just because you like to do, like, because you want to do it. Like, so they go, oh, horns is really interesting.
Yeah.
And that just, that obviously just feels like that was something that was really important to him and not, oh, you know, he's chasing an audience and he's trying to, it seems like, oh, you do stuff because you're passionate about something.
Yeah. And because I can't, because I'm like, I feel like that's how most people would like to, you know, guide their careers, but it's just not an option that's open to everyone. And like, it's, I'm very fortunate that I do have that. So yeah, that's what I like, and I get to do like crazy. The film I want you to like look out for and see that I've got coming up as well. I know I'm obviously here to promote Victor Frankenstein, and that's what everyone should be going to see on Thanksgiving, obviously.
Yes.
But I did another crazy thing called Swiss Army Man.
Yes.
Which with the Daniels brothers. They're not fucking brothers. But I call them that. There's Daniel Scheiner and Daniel Kwan. They're definitely not brothers. They're
technically Daniel brothers because they have the first name.
Yeah,
Daniel,
exactly. So
they're
there
brothers
you go.
In name.
Oh, hello, Matt.
Matt Myra joined us.
Good to see you, Dan.
Hello, good to see you, Chris.
Matt Myra, how are you?
Someone wrote Nerdist on the calendar. That meant any of three places. I was at the wrong ones.
Oh, no! Sorry, it's very rare that we're here at this space. We usually do these at midnight.
Oh, okay, cool.
So what's this movie?
It's a weird one. I've kind of been a bit of a tease here because I'm going to say now, like, I don't want to tell you too much about it because it is... I'll give you the crazy line, which is it is about a guy who is... sort of self-imposed exile in the woods, living like in the wilderness, and he finds a dead body, and the dead body and he have a very heartwarming and amazing adventure together.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
sounds like Castaway.
it's
so that was but, like, that was a, that like, was a volleyball.
But, like, I am talking Wilson.
No, that's the after show I host about Castaway.
I am talking Wilson.
Yeah,
airs every 3 months on the movie channel.
So what did you love about the movie?
It was one of the greatest professional experiences I've ever had because the director. Were, as well as being geniuses, and I don't say that lightly, but like the stuff they do, and they have their technical knowledge means that like so much of it was done like without visual effects and just through being very clever with cameras and tricks, and like just they are the guys that did the video for Turn Down for What.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right.
Where everyone's just like humping stuff and
I've heard of
floor.
That song.
Yes. They basically know, like, pretty much everyone on that crew has either worked for them for like 6 years or went to college with them.
Oh,
so
that's
like
awesome.
The atmosphere on there was just amazing, and watching like the art department find stuff just like in the woods. We were filming in the woods in California, and they would just be building sets out of stuff that they were finding. It was really an amazing, because that's, you know, what I was sort of talking about earlier a little bit in the speech as well, was just like the thing that is amazing about making films and about that experience for me is the fact that it is collaborative and the fact that you are in the middle of probably the greatest number of people doing the most varied number of disciplines all towards making one thing happen. And that's like when, you know, that feeling of being in the middle of that and of like, that's what like I, whenever I can help out with something like that's not acting involved, I do as well, just because it's like, I don't know, it's you feeling a part of that sort of community feel, and because that's what I had growing up on Potter as well, was like everyone was there for a long time, so we knew each other really well, and so that's why it was, when you get that feeling on a set like Swiss Army Man, which is only like a 25 day shoot, we were essentially shooting an action movie in 25 days.
Oh my God.
Because it's like, what did somebody say it was like? They said it was like if Terrence Malick was directing a Farrelly Brothers movie. it was how somebody described it. And I was like, yeah, that's probably about right. Just like beautiful shots of ridiculous shit.
When does that come out?
I don't know. I like, fingers crossed, maybe like it'll be doing some festivals at the beginning of next year. It went through the Sundance Labs, so I don't know if that means it'll be there, but I hope it will.
I mean, you're talking about community, and the thing that I think the Victor Frankenstein panel at Comic-Con this year was one of my favorite panels to do.
Oh, cool.
Because you and James McAvoy had such a great relationship.
Yeah.
And ultimately he pinned
it's
you up against the wall.
Because he did 11 panels.
I did.
That is. Thank you, God. 11 panels.
But you know, so, but when you're doing a lot of panels, you know, some the thing about it is you have to drive a lot of it because not every actor is comfortable about talking in front of 7,000 people.
Yeah.
They also don't know what they can and can't say. It's a very surreal experience. They're tired because they just flew in for it. So when you guys come on and you're fucking around and you're really fun and funny and cool, it just makes it so much more fun and easy for me.
Yeah, well, James and I definitely, like, we counteract that by just, like, not caring about a lot of that stuff. Like, I think we, like, think about it later. Like, should we have said that? Maybe not. I mean, it's fine. But that's the thing. I think we also, I've always been, like... I know, I think maybe that's an advantage of starting young as well, is that you have no other option in interviews but to be yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're so young, you're not going to try and, like, do a character or be somebody or not. You haven't got those systems in place yet. So, like, I didn't have that option.
Plus,
so
you're not guarding anything because you're not nothing to guard. You're a kid.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I think that you sort of learn that, like, being yourself is actually enough. Like, you don't have to try and be that more than that. And if you do, on the rare occasions that I have tried to be more than that, it normally goes very
it always backfires.
Like, dick.
There's no...
I have a strict policy of never trying to be funny at awards shows. Just, like, whenever I'm presenting an award and they're like, hey, would you make a few jokes beforehand? I'm like, no. Because no one is ever funny and no one's here to see me. They just want to know who won. Like, it's not like... Yeah. Can I also congratulate you on your Chappie episode about Midnight? I know it was a long time
ago. Thank you very much.
I was, honestly on the point of crying.
Thank you, Dale.
At the end of that. Because it wasn't just a Chappie. I know there was a few running gags that night, but they were all,
helped make Chappie the number one.
No.
Oh, hang on. I'm a huge fan of Neil Blomkamp. Like, District 9, I think, is one of the greatest, you know, especially... When you look at District 9 and you go, okay, how does he make this for almost no money? And then you look at Transformers and you're like, man, you have all the money in the world. You got no fucking excuse. But with Chappie, it was a little like, am I missing? I don't
Chappie,
know.
Chappie, there's something funny about the title.
Yes, Chappie.
B, the premise. It just became this stupid-looking robot on the...
It was basically Short Circuit.
It seemed like it was
Short Circuit.
And it seemed like no one gave a shit about it.
I'm surprised you didn't just go, number 5 is alive.
I mean, that's my most favorite thing is going on television, and they ask for the plugs, and all I promoted was the fact that I was going to be at a screening just watching it on at 7:30 p.m.
Wait, can we also say, did anyone else see the thing? And I don't like to, this is just like, I'm not talking shit about somebody. I sort of am, but I'm about to tell a story. But it was like, it's a public thing. But has anyone seen the Shia LaBeouf thing that's going on right now in New York?
Yes, it's amazing.
I haven't seen it yet.
He's
live streaming?
No, he's watching all of his movies in reverse chronological order in a theater for 3 days, and you can go and watch them with him.
Uh-huh. You can just go sit with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, at any time.
He hangs out at our gym. He just hangs out there.
Yeah, in jeans, works out.
Yeah, there's a gym that Matt and I both go to, and he just hangs out there.
It's just the weirdest thing, though, because that is, like, my idea. Like, if there's a hell and I go there, that is what my hell would be.
Watching
all of my films, like, forever.
Then you get to quiet people that, shh, that's the best part.
A lot of people, hell is watching all of Shia LaBeouf's movies in reverse chronological order.
You just made me think of it because it's the Transformers.
Does he end with the Even Stevens movie?
I don't know. I do want to backtrack and say a little bit. I did not see Chappie. I don't know if Chappie...
No, nor did I. So I never saw it.
That's hilarious. That's what I love about
it. Might be a great movie.
You had no affiliation to
Might
it.
Might be a great movie.
Was so good.
I just felt like the trailers didn't really sell it as well as it as if it's a really good movie.
And I have been on a lot of cross-country flights since that it was available to watch, and I still skipped it.
You know what I did watch recently? That is a great... Because, you know, I like kind of... I don't know if we talked about, like, the sort of my taste in, like, B-movies the last time we spoke. Mm-hmm. But, like, I finally got around to watching Dragonblade the other day. I don't know if you're aware of it. Is the Jackie Chan, John Cusack, Adrian Brody, Chinese Fight the Romans movie.
That's available on Delta right now.
It is. And it's also available on demand.
I demand to see this movie!
Because we saw the trailer for it ages ago, and I was like, this looks incredible. and it really is.
Really?
It's so worth watching, just because it's the... Just because, like, there's some of the strangest performances. Jackie Chan's, like, really good. Adrian Brody's actually, like, full-on giving performance. John Cusack's just, like, American John Cusack.
Yeah, he's there.
He's just, like, fully American as a Roman centurion. It's fantastic.
Scenes. He's got two vape pens in his mouth.
I can't wait to see Dragonblade.
And because also it's, like, there's clearly so much money has gone into it. So I think it's, like, some huge co-production.
Yep,
and it's
sure.
It is a big movie. And there's one fight scene at the end where, like, all the different people from the Silk Road are there, and it's like the fight scene in Anchorman where just everyone...
everyone brings everything. It's
really good. And I also watched San Andreas the other day, which is genuinely an
also
awesome
a great plane movie.
I'm not being at all ironic about that. Like, I almost shed a tear. They thought they did the family stuff really well.
I'm
such a fan.
You know, I should watch it. The reason I'm being
watch
a dick
it.
About because I love the I think The Rock is fucking great. But the thing about it was that I got all nerdy about it because I know that none of the science and I know it's not supposed to be. But there was nothing remotely
but
accurate.
But Paul Giamatti's giving it to you, so you kind of take it well. You go, okay. And he has a couple of great lines that are clearly ad-libbed.
What am I doing in this movie?
He's great in it. And, like, yeah, man, Dwayne Johnson is so good. He's, like, every movie he's been... And I, like, grew up loving WWF as it was then.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm just immensely happy every time I see him in a great...
Is there a Rock or rap song that encapsulates the story at the end that rolls during the credits?
No,
there's
not. There is not. There's no, like, there's no deeper, bluer...
I'm gonna shake it up with my love! Like, there's no, like, Aerosmith kind of jam at the end?
Do you remember the Deep Blue Sea one?
Yeah, Deep Blue Sea!
Deepest, bluest, my hand is like a shark fin.
Well, you got LL.
My hand is like a shark fin.
In the movie, of course he's gonna...
He was so good in that movie.
Record a track.
I got to show my fiancé Deep Blue Sea for the first time. She'd never seen it.
Great film.
And,
Sam Jackson's death scene in that film.
It's such a great, and Tom Jane's just all ripped and just fucking like he's the dude. That movie is spectacular. I absolutely love that movie.
Yeah, me too.
The other good plane movie right now is Terminator Genisys.
Okay,
I was really into watching that on a plane and not in a theater.
How many times have you seen Spectre?
Spectre, I've only seen twice.
How is it
so far? I really loved it.
Oh, cool.
I loved it just as a fan of James Bond movies.
I thought it was awesome.
Like, they threaded the needle of giving me everything I wanted, but apparently no one else.
But that's nice, because you can feel they made the movie pure
for
you.
But it's doing well,
isn't it? Great.
Oh, yeah, it's doing
great. It's doing just fine. But when adjusted for inflation, though, it's interesting. I was reading a big article in Bloomberg today about it, where it seems like it has to cross... They think it's going to peter out at about 180 million domestic. Right now, it's already at 300 million
can
worldwide.
Can you peter out at 180 million?
Apparently, you can. And they were like adjusting it for inflation, and when they adjusted for inflation across all the James Bond movies, it's the worst opening since License to Kill.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know
somebody
that.
Was so pleased with themselves when they worked that out.
Yeah.
Like, I can deliver this bad news.
But it jumped 30% from Sunday to Monday, which never happens. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next week.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah, they're doing just fine. I think they'll make
really
another one.
They might make another one. They could make another one.
It'll be interesting because Sony this time doesn't have... They're like, they need a new distributor because the Sony deal's done.
Oh.
Yeah.
Should we just distribute it ourselves?
Yeah, I think.
What do you got? What'd you bring? I got like $100.
I don't know if we have to pay for anything. We just get like Land Rover to pay for it. Aston Martin, Gillette, every fucking.
Yeah. You could totally.
I feel like you've made a convincing case there. Let's do this.
Let's pull our money.
You know what? 15, 20 years, you could be a Bond.
I don't really think so. I don't know. I'm trouble seeing myself that way. Because James was asked this question the other day, and he was saying basically the same thing. Like, I feel like also like the cool roles in that film's like. Bad guys,
the villains, yeah.
Like that's sort of what I mean. Not to disparage Daniel Craig, obviously, because he's amazing as Bond, and he has been amazing as Bond. But like, it's sort of the villains and how you remember the films.
Sure.
In a way. Like those are the characters.
Because they're the only things that really change. I mean, Bond is basically the same. You know, he's going to go in.
Batista's great as the fucking henchman. Yeah, he's great. Where did he come from? Like, his acting was not very good when he was wrestling.
I got to hang out with a guy on set who's a stuntman who had worked previously as like a wrestler and was just like telling me like amazing stories about who's super cool and like the Hardy Brothers are awesome apparently. Yeah. Just about the process of wrestling and how it works. It was like fascinating.
Do you ever see yourself starting to produce things that revolve around?
I thought you were going to say stepping into the ring.
Me too.
Would you want to step into the ring?
Oh, no.
I mean, do you think it's time?
I went to one.
Do you want a shot at the title?
No, I just...
um. What if I just like called out whoever's the champion?
Please do.
No.
Hi, this is Dan Radcliffe.
I think he had to vacate because he got injured at the last pay-per-view. He had to vacate the title.
Who did?
Whoever was the champion right now had to vacate. I forgot.
But you know, when you look at something like that, and you know, is it do you go, oh, I'd love to? Would you ever do you try to produce or seek out projects that are based on things like that that you love, or do you feel like, no, I'd rather just be entertained by it rather than get involved with it?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I mean, that's the thing. Like I love like big disaster movie type things, but I think I'd kind of probably be shitting them. Like I don't necessarily think that like. Because that's the thing, it's, I don't know, I love watching them, but, like, I don't know if I had to, like, Paul Giamatti deliver a load of, kind of, bullshit science, that if I would believe myself doing that, and I mean, I know, although, like...
Are you
know,
promoting a movie full of bullshit science right
actually
now?
Kind of, I suppose.
I think you can do it, Daniel.
The difference between a movie like San Andreas and Victor Frankenstein.
What, Mary Shelley wrote a grant?
Well, it's the idea that I think there's a certain amount of suspended disbelief when you go into a movie like, when he discovers, you know, like how to reanimate the dead, you know, going into that, well, the science on this doesn't check out. But for a contemporary disaster film that presupposes the worst disasters are going, there's going to be a confluence of the worst disasters all at one time, and it's going
to
be...
Well, that's the thing. They do stick to one disaster, though, in San Andreas.
Oh, it is.
It is just earthquakes. Yeah. It's not like earthquakes that cause tornadoes, that cause volcanoes or something else.
Well, I mean, there's a tsunami, but that's... You're onto something. Yeah.
But, like, that's... I don't think I get... I could... Yeah, I just... I don't know if I'll be as good in those...
Should we have James Bond fight a tornado in our movie?
We should have James Bond fight Mothra, I think. Yeah. James Bond versus Gamera or Mothra. I think one of those would be really great.
I don't hate that idea.
I think it'd be fucking great. I wish... You know, you know, if I were ever a crazy billionaire, I would just buy properties and just fucking mash them up.
If...
all right, I'm not...
I believe you're getting married to a...
All right, let's...
Not crazy billionaire.
Let's just take it down several notches.
What would you do? Because I want to have this on tape so I can play it at the wedding reception.
Not really... We're here to talk about Dan.
I'm kind of interested too now. I didn't know any of that.
Chris, what would you do if you were a crazy billionaire in this outlandish tale?
You can cut this out, Katie. My fiance's great-grandfather was William Randolph Hearst.
Oh, wow!
See, Daniel Radcliffe's laughing at you, Chris.
Oh, Matt, that, is, Katie, that is a name.
You can't Matt cut this out, but send the file to me.
What a
thing to be teased like about.
Well, it's a...
It's hilarious, but you just said a statement.
But it's also
if
like,
I was ever a crazy billionaire,
the way you said it was also great because you were just like, so there's a thing.
Listen, I should probably just get this.
Don't worry,
I'll
say it really quickly. That's amazing. That's really cool. Have you watched it since Kane? Like,
we've not watched it. No, we haven't watched it together.
Yeah,
like,
has
she talked about it? Like, is there an opinion of it within the family?
Great question. Daniel,
I think the opinion is fine as far as I know, but I don't know. I think they honestly haven't really watched it. And the first time that it was referred to, I laughed heartily because it came up. We were talking about something about... I think we may have been talking about Orson Welles. And then she just very casually said, oh, well, when you made the movie about my great-grandfather, it was like, the movie about your great-grandfather, you mean Santa's a cake? Like, it was one of those.
That's amazing.
But it wasn't, it was very casual,
That's
I don't know, yeah, anyway.
But I didn't mean to steer us off topic. What would you do if you were a crazy billionaire?
I would mash up a bunch of weird...
I love this idea.
I would buy the rights to things and then just, like, force them together.
That would be amazing.
I would put James Bond in a movie with Super Mario Brothers.
I would want to do a movie that will never get made, but it would be some shit goes down in London that causes Batman to go to London, and then Her Majesty's Secret Service they're like, oh, this is a threat. We gotta send our best agent after him.
That's
you have Batman full gadget arsenal Bond full gadget arsenal, and they just go head to head.
It's actually kind of a great idea.
I actually,
like, the fights would be great because they're both amazing. Kind of they're both humans. Yeah.
It almost kind of sounds more interesting than Batman versus Superman.
Yes, it is much
because
more.
They both have to. Mm-hmm. They're more leveled. Yes. They're more.
And you get it. You do a fight at a fucking event party where he's just Bruce Wayne in his tuxedo and Bond's in his tuxedo.
Oh
and they
my
have to
god!
Go
I want
head.
This now.
Come on. Come on.
I mean, it is a really good idea. It's such a shame. It would be so hard to make.
World's greatest detective versus the world's best spy.
Oh man, that's so good. Because I was just thinking about Roger Rabbit yesterday, and about how.
Not surprised. I'm not surprised. Chris is just tucked into bed.
Remember when his wife played patty cake on him with Marvin Ackman? I was thinking about how. That, I mean, although Wreck-It Ralph did that to a degree, but the gaming industry
did,
was a little more open
they
to it. But that type of film IP and television IP,
right.
That will never happen again because everyone's so protective of their IP.
Also, like the Lego movie. That's what was so good about that as well. Because Lego has the licenses to all of those characters.
I guess you're right about that.
So but it's a rare thing. You're absolutely right, and there is something incredibly cool about it. And now, like... It's going to be increasingly hard to do that. But that was amazing about the Lego movie. I feel like there was a Harry Potter reference in there somewhere. I feel like Dumbledore.
Wasn't there a Dumbledore? Yeah, there was like a Dumbledore thing in there.
It was Dumbledore and Gandalf, maybe. Maybe it was Hagrid. I don't know. But it was. I was very pleased. It's one of those weird things where, like, whenever lots of those things are being listed or, like, they go through those classic cult things, there's a small party that goes, like, they better mention Potter in a minute. Come on.
I mean, why didn't they mention the... I mean, I don't want to be weird about it, but...
Is it weird that we're not on that list?
I mean, pretty big fucking movies, right? Pretty big movies. I mean, bigger than... You start listing off all the movies that are bigger than this. Yeah. It's fucking bigger than this.
I mean, like, we've done... I mean, Lord of the Rings, like, whatever, but like,
there's
more than
still,
that.
There's still a small billboard for the last Harry Potter movie that's sitting up on Hollywood Boulevard that hasn't been taken down. It's like, how long is this just going to sit here?
Just to remind people, I would say we went to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
I did as well.
And Hogsmeade is almost done. And then you can see the outline of Hogwarts up on the cliff, but it wasn't lit, so it just looked like this ominous... It looks... Because I haven't been to the one in Orlando.
It's so good.
It's the best.
It's like... That's the thing. I was so skeptical when all that stuff was going on and being made, and I was like, is this just, you know... It's going to be done for money and not well, and you know, and it's. But then they included like Stuart Craig, who is the production designer on the films, like designed the part, which means it looks amazing and is the queues are long. Because like you spend 2 hours getting to Ollivander's one shop, and it's like a room this big, so the queue is.
My sister.
I feel like you might have an in.
We went actually, and it was amazing because it was just like we went before it opened, so it was kind of like just we had our own theme park for the day.
Oh, that's incredible!
And we went. And you go into the one shop, and there's a guy in there playing Ollivander, and who is like. In character, and even with us, he was like, "Hey, hello, welcome." And there was this party. The ones go, "You don't need to. It's okay. Like, it's us." Like,
did he give you the same wand, or did he choose a different wand?
I can't remember.
I could see him doing both. I could see him going, "Well, I'm going to stick to the script," or I could see him going, "I'm going to surprise him."
Yeah, absolutely. I can't remember what happened, but they were all. But that's the thing. I got there, and it was like, "Wow, this is genuinely like amazing." And for kids, like
that's my sister works. At University of Orlando in the dark arts or something. She has to be in character all day. It's like, all right.
That's awesome.
I bought so much, because the shop is open where they have all the stuff.
Sure.
I bought so much Ravenclaw stuff.
As it is. Yeah. I mean, Warner Brothers.
How did you end up with your strong Ravenclaw affiliation? Did you just get sorted on, like, Baltimore?
I did get sorted, and I also... When I really kind of thought about it, here's how I think it sort of breaks down.
Yeah, no, I totally, no, it's not. It's really not a bone of contention.
Oh boy, I'll just put this down while Chris goes into this.
I think Gryffindors are probably more of the jocks of Hogwarts because they win the house cups, they win the Quidditch contest. Yeah. I feel like the Ravenclaws are more of like the snarky nerds. I feel like the Slytherins are kind of the obnoxious shitheads.
You just made me remember the joke.
What?
No, go on.
And then the Hufflepuffs are kind of the Derper Derps.
That's the thing. That was what the Harry Potter joke on that midnight that made me howl with laughter was when you just trolled you stupid Hufflepuff.
Oh my god.
I imagine you got so much.
A lot of people did not have a sense of humor about that. It turns out a lot of Hufflepuffs like, fuck you, the Badgers. And I'm like, okay, come on. It's obviously
joking, and like I feel like they should just be making jokes back. That's the
some people really did, but then other people were genuinely
offended. You're like, no, guys.
No, I've just been fucking around.
Yeah.
Because Lydia got sorted into Slytherin, and I got sorted into mine.
Which one's the fat kids? Where do they go? That'd be there.
Hufflepuff.
Great. Into it. Into it. We're gonna have so many snacks.
I mean, I'm not a sorting hat or anything.
We're gonna have so many magical snacks.
I'm not wading into this one.
So the Vicar Frankenstein comes out Thanksgiving week?
Yes, Thanksgiving, November 25th, I believe.
Wednesday. Before Thanksgiving.
Okay, cool. Yep.
That's perfect. Thanksgiving
week. The thing I loved about it was that it's like it was a studio movie that had this kind of, you know, at the heart of it, it's, you know, Igor's not in the book, so it's not by any means a faithful retelling of the book, but it is, what it takes from the book is the sort of argument of the man's relationship to technology and science, and the fact that we live, you know, as sort of written as a response to the fact that we always live in this sort of dual state of extreme gratitude to what technology and science does for us, and kind of a fear of what it can do in the wrong hands. So it was kind of fun that there was this stuff happening on one side of the film, but actually the main thrust of the film was just like this kind of entertaining, chaotic, like ride through 1850s London with these two guys making monsters.
I mean, it just feels like a fun take. I mean, yeah. It's similar to, you know, the first time you saw Guy Ritchie's Sherlock, you're like, oh, this is really fun.
Right.
What a fun take on these guys and this character that we already know, and just a different,
I like the trailer a lot because it seems really frenetic. It all just reminds me of the scene in Back to the Future 2 where Doc and Marty have landed in 1955 and they're running. One runs this way with exposition and then runs back and they're running back and forth talking to each other.
There's a lot of that. I don't know how many miles I ran for this film, but like I did a huge amount of running for this film. I chased quad bikes and cameramen and all kinds of stuff. It was great.
I love it.
But that was fun about it for me as well, was like it's the first time I've got to do a lot of that kind of like stunt stuff since Potter, because you know, if you're playing Allen Ginsberg, there's less stunt action. It was fun to be able to like do all that kind of crazy shit again and be on like mad huge sets. The sets are amazing, which they make the film look like it was made for a lot more money than it was. And Fabian, the DOP, you know, and Jani, our costume designer, are all responsible for that as well. So like yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like I hope people enjoy it. And it's as you say, a new take. And everyone keeps doing this thing where they're like, oh, so many Frankenstein movies. Come on, and you're like, we've had 3 Spider-Mans. We're gonna get another. We're about to get more. Like,
there's been 5 Spider-Mans in the past 15 years.
This place is lousy with Spider-Mans.
Yeah. So many Spider-Mans. Where are all these goddamn Spider-Men coming from?
Kimmy Schmidt joke. There's a play in Kimmy Schmidt. I highly recommend watching the show. Yeah. It's amazing. Tina Fey hit a home run here again. There's a fake play in it called Turn Off the Dark. Or Too Many Spider-Men or something like that.
It's just the actual name of the Spider-Man musical.
I forget what the play is called, but it's like the subtitle is Too Many Spider-Men. And the people keep getting injured from Spider-Man falling onto other Spider-Men. In the audition process, Titus has to act and like as part of the audition, and it's directed by the third Affleck brother. In the audition process, the guy has to jump off the ladder onto Titus to see if he could still act after getting hit by Spider-Man.
There was a friend of mine who I worked with on the musical I did in New York. Who's like one of the most physically capable, fit, disciplined people I've ever met. He got down to like the final auditions for Spider-Man and to be one, I think maybe the Green Goblin or Spider-Man do a lot of that kind of stuff, and just went to final audition and was like, then they presented him with like this this huge metal thing that he would have to wear on his head as he was on wires swinging around, and that above that was the and he had no eyes, really couldn't really see, and he was just like, okay, yeah, no, I'm gone. this is not safe.
I'm gonna die.
And yeah, and it was not.
I've got to go do the Queen musical in the West End.
we will rock you. It's very simple. Do you have some time off now, or are you going to go back and do something else?
I am promoting this, and promoting Vic's Frankenstein really badly on this show, because I barely talked about it.
I've talked about it a lot recently,
so it's people, I've been talking about it. And that's what's fun about coming to this show and doing it, is I get to talk about other weird.
And we'll also front load the show with... We'll front load the show. We'll talk about it too. So it'll get epic. Plenty of plugs.
But yeah, so I'm promoting this, and then I am hopefully going to take a holiday in December, and then after that, I'm going to start a film hopefully next year in February. But like everything else that I'm interested in, like, it's one of the weird indies that is, you know, I don't know. I don't think this one is particularly dependent on the whims of millionaires that just have run money through it.
Or hilarious billionaires.
But like, so I think this one seems like it's definitely happening as definitely as anything can be. But you know, it's hard, because like, that's what this year feels like, a real victory, because we got Swiss Army Man and also Imperium, the one I just finished, which is why I shaved my head. We got both of them made, and they were both indies, and it always feels like a massive victory when you get one of those over the line.
I was going to say, you got a good shaped head. Yeah. I think every dude should shave his head at one point in his life just to see.
Did it?
You have a good shaped head.
I know, terrible idea. I did it once.
But now you know.
I know.
Anyone says.
And I know that I'm going to keep Rogaine handy. can't let the Lord take this away from me. Once I can afford hair plugs.
Yeah, you and McAvoy both basically probably have shaved heads right now.
We both have shaved heads right now, yeah. We look like we're... And everyone's like, it's so crazy. Did you do this together? I'm like, yeah. No, we sat together and shaved each other's heads.
We shaved each other's head and we picked, like, apes. We shaved each other.
We're supporting each other's roles.
He's doing it. His is actually not for Xavier. It's for Split. With M. Night Shyamalan.
Because he's Xavier pre hair loss.
Yeah,
he does
gorgeous head of hair, Xavier. Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it. Victor Frankenstein opens November 25th.
That's a Wednesday, kids.
That is a Wednesday. Thanksgiving Thursday.
You got Friday off. No one's working that day. Head to the theater. The mall's going to be crazy.
How long do you want to hang out with your family anyway? An hour? 2 hours?
Like, if you want something to fill the silence, go see a movie.
Yes! Celebrate the way the pilgrims did by seeing Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah. There's loads of Thanksgiving stuff in it. It's a very Thanksgiving-y movie.
You'll be giving thanks.
Yeah.
When you see Victor Frankenstein, November 25th. But thank you for being here, and hope to see you soon. And safe travels.
Awesome.
Dan Radcliffe, congratulations on your star.
Yeah, and thank you again for being there. And...
Oh, I heard
he got epic placement too. He's right in front of the like Hollywood Highland, and across the street from El Capitan.
Yeah, like
epic placement.
Nailed it.
It was cool. Yeah, it was really like.
Who are you next to?
I'm very near Matt Damon, and I'm near Gig Young, who was in Blazing Saddles, which I think is awesome. And
Bee Gees and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah, absolutely. There was it was some really good. I was very happy. It was really cool. It was one of those things that you sort of are almost in denial of how amazing and cool it is until you get there and you're like, okay, no, this is a big, huge deal.
You got your hands at the Chinese theater too, right?
Yeah.
Man, this kid, he's got everything.
I know.
Knighthood next.
No, I don't think so. I think that's a long way off. No.
I'll make you a knight.
Yeah, okay. Okay, sweet.
Thanks for listening to this podcast with Sir Daniel Radcliffe. It is official.
Awesome. Yeah, you can just name me that. I think like that will stick.
Great. Pretty sure.
Awesome.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.